Partners seeks to deepen American Jews' understanding of Israel's complexities in order to enhance their ability to advocate for a progressive Israeli future. Let me start by introducing our panelists, whom you've all come to hear. I'll begin with Professor Galia Golan, who is a professor emerita of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, where she was chair of the political science department. She's also been head of the department of the program in diplomacy and conflict studies at the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya. She's published 10 books. She has been a leading Israeli and American feminist and peace activist for many years. She's one of the founding leaders of Peace Now, Shalom Achshav, and she's currently a leader of Combatants for Peace. Her bio goes on and on, but I had to cut it somewhere. I'll move now to Dr. Tabet Abu Ras, who is co-CEO of the Abraham Fund Initiatives. Before that, he served as director of the Negev Office of Adala, the Legal Center for Arab Minority Rights in Israel. From 2007 to 2009, Tabet was co-director of the NGO New Horizon, the Arab-Jewish Center for Dialogue and a Shared Society. He holds a PhD in geography and regional development from the University of Arizona. He's a political geographer, has taught at Ben-Gurion University and Sapir College. So welcome to both of our panelists. Let me also add that the discussion will go on for about 40 minutes. After that, we will answer questions from the video audience. Apologies in advance, the phone audience, you won't be able to ask questions. But I encourage everybody to type in your questions into the Q&A window at any time. You just need to look at the bottom of your screen for the icon that says Q&A. You may need to touch your screen if you don't see it or run your mouse over it. Click the icon, type your question in the window that appears, and the conversation will not go away. So you can type it anytime. Also note that the attendees' microphones are turned off, so you can only ask questions that way. Okay? Any questions? Just kidding. Let's get started. So first of all, big welcome to both of our panelists, and thank you. I want to start with a little bit of background. You know, for a long time, for many, many years, that the two-state solution has been the major guiding paradigm. We've all told ourselves for a long time, we all know the solution. We just need to get the two sides to sign it, to agree on it. And the Geneva Initiative kind of generated this slogan that just sign. In other words, the agreement is ready. All we need to do is sign it. So why are we here looking at different solutions? Isn't this really a question of just getting the two sides to agree? What's wrong with the old approach? And I'm going to let you guys decide who goes first.
Well, if I may, I don't see this as an alternative. And I wanted to say that from the outset. I think the two-state solution is the only solution. I mean, there are other options, binational state, apartheid, but the only solution to the conflict is a two-state solution. But having said that, there's a lot more that we can talk about is how will these two states be related and what do we think could improve it? So I from the outside, don't want people to think I'm not talking about a two-state solution. I do not believe that there is any other solution if Jews are to have self-determination, if Palestinians are to have self-determination. But we can go a step further. We try to get the two leaderships, the two countries, to support two states. But we also need to think of how we plan to live together in the future.
Tabet?
Yeah, well, I believe that before that, I would like to state I am here representing myself and not my organization. I'm talking about my own personal views. My organization, the Abraham Fund, actually the Abraham Initiatives, in favor of two-state solution without elaboration. What we are suggesting actually to elaborate in this issue and think out of the box about issues that the traditional two-state solution didn't talk about them or postpone them since Oslo Agreement. I'm talking about settlements, about refugees, and about...
Did we lose Tabet?
While you're trying to reach him...
And inside Israel. This is the basic of our work. And we are building this and we are trying to elaborate to solve the other issues that nobody is trying to talk about them. The issue, the three major issues that I talked about them.
Can you just, Thabet, we lost you for a moment. Can you just go over the three major issues once more?
Yeah, actually we are trying to elaborate and solve the issues of the settlements, Jewish settlements in the territories, the Palestinian refugees, and the issue of Jerusalem. We are proposing a solution for these three issues.
So in a way, it sounds like you both see this as a continuation of the two-state solution, not so much a substantively different solution. Is that correct?
From my point of view, yes. And I also wanted to add the caveat that these are my personal views. I belong to Combatants for Peace, which is a joint Israeli-Palestinian movement of former fighters who advocate nonviolent opposition to the occupation. Many of the people in the movement either support two states or even the idea of one land, two states. But these are my personal views. They're not the views of Combatants for Peace. And I think I also saw in the one land, two states, a solution in many ways to the issue of the settlements. I think first and foremost, it provides a solution to the issue of the refugees, Palestinian refugees, because when you talk about one land, people can live wherever they want, their citizenship will be to their own specific state. But basically, within certain limitations, you can live wherever they want, which means that the Palestinian refugees can return. And this is why I think it was very important as an answer to that issue. I'm not terribly happy with the idea of the settlers being able to stay where they are because they're on stolen land. But apparently there are ways of working this out the same way there are ways of working out where the refugees will go back to. But the importance here is the flexibility.
Okay, I want to, since we got into the substance, I don't want to assume that people really know what we mean when we say confederation. It's a funny word. It sounds a little bit like confederacy. What are we talking about when we talk about confederation? Can you give us an outline? And I think you've both kind of answered my other question related to that, which is this more like two states or is it one state in disguise? So if you can give us the basic outline of what we're talking about, maybe Thabet, you want to start with that and tell us what you think.
Actually,
no, we're not hearing Thabet. Sorry, everybody, a little patience. Let's see if we can get Thabet back.
Self-determination for the Jewish people.
Thabet, I'm sorry, can you start again? Because we didn't hear you in the beginning.
Okay. Well, I'm saying that we are considering the whole territory between the Jordanian River and the Mediterranean as one homeland for Jews and Palestinians. We are in favor of two states, okay, sovereign and independent, as a self-expression of self-determination of both people. Okay, we are talking about free movement within the homeland, okay, between the two states, and mean that people can live where they want, people can work, can move around without any problems, okay? And having said that, we know that settlers can remain and live within the Palestinian state. Right now, the settlements are illegal. We consider them as illegal. But we believe that after establishing the two-state solution, the settlers will live under...
Well, just to continue his sentence till Thabet comes back. Each part, the citizens will live under their own...
Enough people that live in that area, probably we can give them the same rights like just the Arab... a minority within Israel, we should consider both sides as national minorities within Palestinian state, Jewish minority, and within Israel as an Arab minority. We should recognize minorities in both states.
And how will those minorities live in those states? What is their status? Are they citizens of the other side? Are they citizens of their own side? Where will they vote?
Well, Arab Palestinians who citizens of the state of Israel right now will continue to be citizens. Jewish settlers have to choose. They can either be Israeli citizens, continue to be Israeli citizens, or if they want to be Palestinian citizens, they can be there. In any way, the settlers will be under the control of Palestinian government, under democratic system. We have to guarantee rights for all citizens within the Palestinian state as it is in Israel right now.
And what does this mean? So you've addressed the settlers. What we haven't talked about are the other two aspects that you say this initiative is intended to resolve. So one of those is Palestinian refugees. Can you tell us how this addresses the issue of Palestinian refugees?
Sure. Palestinian refugees will have the right to return to the Palestinian state, okay? To the Palestinian state, which will be in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. They will guarantee their citizenship there. However, they can be move around, can work in Haifa, in Tel Aviv, in Beersheba, can study there, can live there even. Just imagine an Italian citizen who are immigrating to Germany, to Berlin, to work there. He still will be Italian, okay? However, he can still work there. Free movement means that people can work everywhere, can move, can study everywhere, can and live everywhere. However, I know that people imagine hundreds of thousands or millions of Palestinians are moving to Tel Aviv and Haifa. We can do that gradually.
And I might add that in the program, as it exists at the moment, each state will determine its immigration policy in terms of numbers of how many immigrants. When I say immigrants, I mean people who can become citizens. So that there will be, in a sense, a certain limitation on it. But I think what's important here is that there will be a lot of joint institutions. Security is going to be a joint operation. Human rights is going to be joint in terms of a joint human rights commission, for example. And I don't know that we know specifically how all this will work, but the plan is to try. It's the opposite of what you hear a lot in Israel today of people who want separation. We don't advocate separation, and I personally don't advocate separation. I think that...
Why not, Galia? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, so many Israelis just say, you know, this is too complicated, everybody hates each other, we just need to live separately. Why do you not agree with that?
Because we can't live separately. We can't.
Why not?
We live together. We're there two peoples in this same piece of land. It's a fact. We can't separate. And frankly, I don't think we need to. I think it's entirely possible to work together, to live together. We do that in Combatants for Peace. And yes, there is a history of hatred, but separating them, I think, is only going to lead to a recidivism, that is each side wanting what the other one has. I don't think that's a solution. If a Palestinian can't go to Jerusalem, can't go to Haifa, And if a Jewish Israeli can't go to Hebron or wherever you want in the West Bank, for example, you're not going to have a solution that's going to last long. You're going to have resentment. You're going to have recidivism. And I'm not saying that there wouldn't be problems. We know there'll be problems. I'm sure there'll be problems because you have extremists. You certainly have extremists amongst the settlers and amongst Palestinians. But trying to separate it, I think, is a formula for catastrophe in the future.
Okay, let's try to get to the last of the three issues.
Can I say words about separation? I am sitting right now in Lod.
Except we keep losing you.
It's probably a plot.
You never know. Anything could happen.
Well, there is an effort by the government.
But I cannot really say Israel. When the commanders for Israeli security stating that we are here and they are there in terms of separation, who are they and who are we? Am I we or am I there? Okay, they. So I believe that this area should be, will.
Sorry, everybody, we keep losing Tabet.
But I think that's exactly the point that he just made. You can't separate people.
Let me try to paraphrase. I think he was saying that it's when we talk about us and them, there are too many people who have a crossover, either in terms of their identity or in terms of the land. And I hope we'll get him back to explain it in his words. In the meantime, I wanted to see if we could find out what the proposed solution on Jerusalem is, because we talked about the settler issue, we talked about the refugee issue. And now, you know, the third issue that Tabet said this is intended to resolve is the Jerusalem issue. Until we get him back, Galia, do you want to explain that, or I'm happy to fill in?
I think the Jerusalem issue is the easiest issue of them all.
Oh, good. I never heard anybody say Jerusalem was easy before.
It's not a hard issue. It really isn't. If you look back at the Olmert-Abu Mazen talks, they came up with an idea that is very similar, and that is you have one city. And you're obviously going to have one city because you basically have one land where people can move about freely. So they can move about freely in Jerusalem as well, and they can live where they want. There will be, from what I understand of the program itself, this one land, two states, there will be separate municipalities, but certain issues and certain topics will be joint. And I think I really would prefer Tabet get into it in more detail. But it's very similar to all of the ideas we've had out there before, that you have a joint group supervising the holy places. You have, for very specific municipal issues, you have separate municipalities. But for the more general ones, you have joint administration. You have Jews can live where they want and Palestinians can live where they want. I think that this, I really think this is the easiest issue of them all, mainly because it's already been almost agreed. Even in Camp David, Barak didn't go as far as he should have, perhaps, but he was moving in that direction. The Palestinian neighborhoods would be under with Palestinian sovereignty, Jewish neighborhoods under Israeli sovereignty. I will grant you that the settlers have made it more difficult because they have purposely moved into Palestinian neighborhoods to prevent that kind of solution. But if you could live anywhere and simply vote for your own state, I think that would apply in Jerusalem as well.
But let me ask you point blank. Many people who support two states believe there should be an international border, a hard border, dividing Jerusalem so that everybody knows which side is which, and that divides the two countries. Do you think that that should or shouldn't be the case?
No, I don't think either Palestinian Authority, the PLO, nor anybody I know in the Israeli peace movement would suggest a hard border. For the very same reason, you can't really have a hard border between Israel and Palestine. There's just too much that's joint, too much that crosses or should be able to cross freely. And I don't think that any realistic peace agreement would talk about a hard border from that point of view. Now, the city is divided. I'm a Jerusalemite, and it's true. Palestinians live in the east section, and the Jews tend to live in the west section. But that doesn't mean it's a hard border by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay.
By the way, before the intifadas, Palestinians were, you'd see many Palestinians at concerts in West Jerusalem. You certainly would see Israelis at events in East Jerusalem. And there's no reason not to have that.
I want to get exactly into this point, and I'm hoping that if we get Tabet back, that he will just jump in, because otherwise...
I'm happy to answer any question. Yeah.
Okay, you're just a little bit fuzzy. Do you want to add anything about Jerusalem?
Yeah, well, I believe that Jerusalem is very important, not only for Palestinians and Israelis. It's very important for the global community. We should make Jerusalem as good, first of all, united, free, and the capital for both people. I know there's a lot of mistrust right now, but if we believe in peace, and we have to manage this city together, and we can do that.
Okay, we keep losing him, but I think Dinesh is helping us try to get him back. I want to ask, you know, Galia, this may not be your specific contribution, but I think we need to raise it because I'm sure it's on everybody's mind, which is the issue of security. And security really underlies all of these issues. Let's just start with Jerusalem because we were talking about it already. We have neighborhoods where Palestinian neighborhoods are very, very close to Jewish neighborhoods. There are sometimes attacks. Sometimes the Israeli army puts up roadblocks around neighborhoods right inside the city. Can these, you know, what is to prevent, if both sides have access to Jerusalem, complete access? Israelis have access today. Most Palestinians in the West Bank do not have access to Jerusalem. If Jerusalem is an open city and the capital of both countries, and all Palestinians have access to it, how can we cope with the security challenge? And if you don't feel like you want to answer that, it's okay, but do you have a perspective on it?
I think security is the heart of the issue, whether it's Jerusalem or the whole area from the Jordan River to the sea. But that's exactly the point. And there are two things here. One is that you were talking about a situation where we do not have peace. And I want to tell you something. In all the peace negotiations that Israel's been engaged in with the Syrians, originally with the Egyptians, we're always posing an issue of, well, we hate each other, another army is going to come across the border, and so on. And each time the other side, whether it was Assad, the father in Syria, or Sadat, said, but we're talking about peace. We're not talking about continued hostility. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that you have joint security. To some degree, we have had joint security in the past, in the Oslo period. To some degree, we have cooperation between the Palestinian Authority police, the security services, and our own, and it works. It works even in these circumstances where we do not have a peace agreement. If you want to talk about where there is a peace agreement with Egypt or Jordan, it also works. So you have a police force, and the police force is joint. Security is joint. Security for the whole land will be joint. We're not dissolving any army, and there will certainly be border security, but it will be joint. And I think the interesting thing to me is that the person who designed the security arrangements for this program, for the One Land, Two States, is a former, I think he was deputy head of the National Security Council. He's a former military person. And somebody I highly respect, and I will admit my first questions were about security.
Wait, can you say who that is, Galia?
My first questions were about security.
No, I was thinking, can you say the name of the person that you said designed the security approach?
And the point is it has been very clearly thought out. It sounds, in many ways, it sounds naive or it sounds utopian. But we've had joint security before. When there is a will, and when you've got agreement, you have two states, you have a peace agreement, then you have a desire on both sides to keep it. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be extremists. That doesn't mean there won't be people who try to violate it. And you have joint security. You have joint security for your external border, which is basically a border with Jordan. That's our external border. No border is safer than that, as even today, because we have a peace agreement with Jordan. So while security, in my opinion, is perhaps the most important thing, the same way borders, refugees are important, I think that there are answers to it. Look, we don't know that this is fail-proof. We know that what we see today is certainly not something we want for the future. And if looking at how two states could live together, it would seem to be that you can reduce hostility and build reconciliation if you have this kind of flexible situation of open borders between the two, where people can live or work and move about freely.
Okay, I think Tabit is back. Tabit, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, good. We want to leave time for questions, and we have, I want to encourage people to write your questions. I would say we have about 10 minutes left for us to talk. So let me ask Tabit a question. Galia mentioned that some people criticize this idea as being sort of utopian. And I have to tell you that in my conversations, I have been told by two state supporters, you guys dream about unicorns and rainbows. So Tabit, I want to ask you, who supports this idea? Are they just dreamers and left-wingers? What is the variety of people who have become active in supporting this approach?
Dalia, I'm sorry I couldn't hear your question. Could you
repeat it? Yes. My question is, what kind of people in Israel and Palestine support this approach? Are they all left-wing dreamers, or are they more diverse? Who are they? What kind of people?
Dalia, you know, we met with the Palestinian group just 2 weeks ago, and with more than 30 people, Palestinian and Israelis. These were Jewish settlers, leftists, academicians, business people, very diverse people. I know that right now people think that we are utopian, we are dreamers.
I'm sorry, everybody.
We neither left nor right people. We are trying to promote a solution, just solution for Palestinians and Israeli. And one important pillar in our principles, injustice cannot be corrected by injustice to other people. And people like this idea that we have to look to the future rather to go back and think about the history all the time. This whole land is very valuable for Jews and Palestinians. And people would like, I'm telling you about my relatives in Gaza Strip. When they are talking about homeland, the Palestinian state, they don't talk today about the West Bank and Gaza. They think about the whole geographical territory between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean. It's the same thing with many Jewish people. Today, there is no single one official map in Israel with the green line border. Okay? Today, if you talk about the geographical...
I'm going to give that one more second. Tabet, are you back? Can you repeat your last sentence, please?
Yeah. I believe that Palestinians and Israelis are sharing today almost everything. Water, infrastructure, roads, economy, okay? And it feels that this is the future. Two states as a self-determination, expression of self-determination of both people, in the same times, free movement in all of the homeland.
Let me ask socially oriented questions. You said, Tabet, that the people who support this are a variety of backgrounds, academics, journalists, settlers, activists. What do we know about politicians? Are there any people at the level of political elite, the kind of people who would be responsible for negotiating and agreeing to this, who might support this? Have you been in contact with any of them on either side?
Well, I can tell you that we approached many people in Israel here or overseas. Our ideas are very accepted in Europe. Here we tried to talk with the president of Rivlin in Israel, and he knows about us. He liked some of our ideas. He think we are in the right direction, but still he not accepting everything that we are stating. Okay, we talk in the left and the right, some rabbis even in the right.
While we're waiting for Tabet, I just want to clarify that President Rivlin is actually on record from several years ago saying that he supports a confederation. He has never really spelled out exactly what he means by that. So just to give some background, Galia, can you weigh in on this question?
Well, yes, I think, I don't call this a confederation, by the way.
Okay, what do you call it?
I mean, because there are different forms of confederations, and I guess this is a form, or would be a form of confederation. But confederation, in my sense, is more of two totally independent states with their hard borders and so forth, that join together for certain institutions. And there is a certain amount of travel permitted between them, but it's much more rigid. Now, that's just my interpretation, and we're both political scientists. We know there are different types of confederations. And I used to think, much like Abba Evan talked about a Benelux situation, including Jordan, Palestine, and Israel, which is what I thought of originally. Okay, you'll have Israel with close relations to Palestine, certainly a lot of economic cooperation. But I will admit this goes much, much further than that, much further. And the hardest thing for me to accept, and I think the hardest thing for most Israelis to accept, would be the open border, the fact that security is joint and you can move about and live on wherever you want. I think that would be the hardest thing for people to believe, because mistrust, as you've pointed out, is so strong. But I think ultimately, as utopian as it sounds, it's the only realistic thing. And Tabit just said it. He has relatives in Gaza. And as I mentioned earlier, I am most hesitant about having settlers and working with settlers. But for them, it's an answer. For them, right. It's an answer. If they are not overly ideologically motivated and they believe that God gave this land only to them, then you've got a problem.
Right. Okay, we have Tabit back. I want to make one quick point, which is that we've talked several times about security cooperation. Just to clarify for anybody on the line who is not aware, the security cooperation goes on today and has been going on ever since the Oslo Accords. It's pretty much the only remaining functioning part of the Oslo Accords. So we don't have to guess about whether it's possible. Tabit, I want to ask you one more technical question, and then we'll start to summarize. I'm sure many people have started to look at the West Bank separately. Where does Gaza fit into this whole situation? Is Gaza an integral open, do you just open the border with Gaza? How does it work?
Gaza is part of the homeland, first of all. And then it's part of the Palestinian state as recognized by the international community. We cannot really forget or alienate Gaza. Gaza is part of the game. Unfortunately, today Gaza is passing through very difficult times because of Israeli siege, because of Hamas, because of the Palestinian Authority, and also because of Egypt. Okay. So, but Gaza is part of the game. We are talking about 2 million Palestinians. Geographically, is a part of the homeland that should be integrated.
Okay. For our summary questions, and then we will move on to everybody else's questions. I see we have 9 questions. Feel free to keep writing them in the Q&A window. And I'll try to get to them and I will say your names just to let people know who's asked the questions. But to wrap up my portion, could you both tell me what you think is the biggest obstacle to achieving this kind of approach and maybe also the biggest benefit, the single biggest benefit of this approach, by contrast to a two-state solution?
I believe that the biggest obstacle is the mistrust between two nations, two groups, okay, and the fear discourse that is especially within the Israeli society. There is a very strong fear discourse and politics of fear, okay, from the enemy, from the other. So we have to build the trust. We have to give a hope. I believe Palestinians are ready. Most of Palestinians even ready for such a solution that can give them a hope. Right now, their last hope. I'm sorry that I keep losing you, so I cannot hear. Couldn't hear all of the questions.
That's okay. Do you want to add what you think the biggest benefit? Can you point to one thing that is the biggest benefit of this?
Well, it's a great benefit for everybody in this geographical era just to move around without any fear, without any problem, and to consider and to try to feel the attachment, the self of ownership, self of belonging of the whole geographical area between homeland. And I am a secular person. Why I have to deprive a religious Jew from the hills of Judea and Samaria? Okay, I believe that he has the right to move around at least, or to live there if he wants. The same thing with every single Palestinian who make return to the Palestinian state and then visit.
Okay, I think we heard almost the end. Galia, do you want to add what you think is the biggest challenge to achieving this and possibly the biggest benefit if it ever is achieved?
No, I agree 100% that the biggest challenge is the mistrust. And I also agree, certainly the Israeli government for many years has been manipulating fear, and not only manipulating fear, but actually lying to the public about what has been accomplished, what compromises have been agreed to by the Palestinians, the fact that they recognize our right to be here, our right to exist. So there is a lot of manipulation and painting of all Palestinians are Hamas. When there's a terrorist attack, it's described by the government as not as resistance to the occupation, but that it's anti-Semitic, they hate Jews and so on. So there's no question that the biggest obstacle is the mistrust that is cultivated, certainly on the Israeli side.
Okay.
I think that the greatest benefit is undoubtedly the freedom to move about. If we go back to an obstacle, obviously we know that an objective obstacle to peace altogether is the settlements. And I think to some degree, this whole idea came in part to resolve that. That, okay, a lot of the settlers can stay where they are, but to be citizens of Israel, but to obey the laws of Palestine and so forth. So these issues of the settlers and the right of return, which are enormous obstacles in most people's minds, as distinct from Jerusalem, which I said is an easy one, they can be answered here. And that's the major benefit of it, is that it doesn't solve everything, but it makes it a lot easier to tackle these problems. But the most important thing is a Palestinian who is not allowed or must have a permit to go and visit relatives in Jerusalem, even in East Jerusalem, is going to be an enemy in the future. That's the reason, or a basic reason, that this separation thing is not a solution. It's not the answer. So the greatest benefit will undoubtedly be, and it'll take time to get used to it and to implement it, and we have to get a government on Israel's side that would agree to it, because they do everything they can to keep us from knowing each other, because I think for obvious reasons. But if we can get agreement to two states and then work out the relationship between these two states along the lines of freedom, freedom of movement, of communication, I think then we will have, I think then we have a chance. It's putting our heads in the sand to think that we can just separate the two peoples and everything is going to be fine. Even with the peace agreement, Palestinians belong in Palestine, and you can't deny Palestinians from being able to go to Jerusalem or Gaza or Haifa, and many, many, many Jews feel that we belong as much in the West Bank as we do inside Israel proper, and you're not going to be able to even build trust or have a future if we don't acknowledge this and make it possible.
Okay, well, I guess that's where the word homeland becomes important. And on that note, I want to move to the questions, because Galia, you raised something that relates to our very first question. We will try to get to as many as possible. Again, reminder, go to the bottom of your screen, find the Q&A icon. When the window opens, feel free to type your questions. And we'll do the best we can. Maybe the panelists want to try to keep the answers short so that we can get to all 13. The first question relates to something Galia talked about, which is the upcoming elections. And Dr. Ayala Emet said the Shin Bet is warning of foreign interference. Netanyahu is refusing to act on it. His party opposes the two-state solution anyway. Are we worried about this? And do we think that our positions, all of our panelists, could influence the election? Which of the parties who have begun to express their lack of support for the two-state solution might be open to this? Can you see any parties that might be? I'm paraphrasing a little bit, Dr. Emet. Thank you for your patience. Ken, yes. Maybe we'll start with Tabit, because are you back? No, I think you're trying to speak, but we can't hear you. No, Tabit, we can't hear you. Maybe you'll have to log in and out again. Galia, do you want to talk about the Israeli elections a little bit?
I think the answer to your question is no, that no party that is opposed to a two-state solution is going to go for this plan, because this plan is based on the two-state solution and then relations between these two states. at the moment, the Labour Party favors separation. That's been their big line all along, because their issue is demography. And if they can get rid of the Palestinians through separation, they feel that they can have a Jewish state. There is
Did you just say that Labour stands for something on the conflict? I haven't heard the Labour Party chair say anything lately about the conflict. Have you?
I'm the expert, but I believe the only two parties that openly and strongly support two states might be interested are Meretz and the joint Arab list, as long as it stays joint.
Okay, so if anybody didn't hear, I think Galia said Meretz and the joint list, which is the amalgamation of three Arab parties. Taba, would you like to answer the question about how, is there any opportunity now to weigh in on the Israeli elections? Are we concerned about who wins the elections, that this plan will never be appropriate? I mean, that's the paraphrase.
No, I don't think we can rely on an election. I think the right wing will come again to power, and we have to wait. We have to work in the grassroots. I think we have to take the streets, try to do, to work from bottom up. This is the only way. And as long as the left and the center in Israel so disorganized, there is no hope in the political level.
Okay, thanks for that no hope answer. The next question actually is something that was addressed. I'll just explain that the question was from Lev Meyerowitz Nelson, who asked, is two states, one homeland the same as a confederation, or is there a distinction? And I think, Galia, you addressed it when you said that you don't consider this a confederation. And I think that from a political science perspective, the word confederation itself is a little bit murky in the political science literature. So maybe it, quick answer on that. Either of you, do you want to, I wouldn't want to spend too much time on it because we have lots of questions, but is there any clarity you want to provide us with?
I think it's a form of confederation. There are many different types of confederations. I won't go into them. That have been proposed, for example, in Cyprus and so on. It is a form of confederation, but it's a very, very loose confederation because each state will have its own foreign policy, but the security is going to be joint. So it's a very loose confederation.
Okay. Tabet, did you want to answer anything?
Generally speaking, I believe confederation should be between two equal states, strong states. We have a very strange situation here, very strong Israel, weak Palestinians. So I really, we have to talk about very mild and loose, as I said, loose federation in the beginning. And we have to develop that. It's gradually. We can't try to go immediately for full confederation between two states, really. It's very tough.
Okay, the next question is from Paul Sham. Hi, Paul. Given that Israel has overwhelming power, why would Israelis agree to a confederation? Let me also give my little twist on that question. What's in it for them?
Oh, peace, security, the end of the conflict. I agree with Paul. Of course, we're stronger. And yes, today, most Israelis would say, who needs an agreement? Because most Israelis today ignore the occupation, say, who needs anything different? But if we're realistic, there is a limit to how long you can maintain an occupation, how long you can be an apartheid state. At least I hope there's a limit. But I think that's the point. But there's no question the elections are important. And I do believe that we have to work on the ground, and certainly in Combatants for Peace. That's exactly the reason I moved to them, is that it's joint Israelis and Palestinians working on the ground, because we have to change public opinion. You're the expert, you're the one who depresses me on how much work has to be done. But this is how it has to be shown that we can find a solution. And if this can be proven, if we can work on this, then it's a question of bringing about a change on the Israeli side. I think the Palestinians, given the fact that they're under occupation, I think that they would welcome anything virtually that will give them independence. But I think also that there's a great deal of realism on the part of the Palestinians, and they know we're not going to go away. We have to get that through to most Israelis.
Okay. Let me ask Thabet. I'm going to amend Paul's question a little bit. Yes, Israel has overwhelming power. We're not sure why Israeli Jews would agree to this. What's in this for Palestinian citizens of Israel? Is this something that they would support more than a two-state solution, in your opinion? I'm making a face because I really don't want to lose you. Try again.
Hello. I am losing you, keep losing you. I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Okay,
do you have a question to me?
Yes. What is the biggest benefit of this plan for Palestinian citizens of Israel, Arab Israelis? Would they have a reason to support it more than the two-state solution?
Well, we are the most beneficial of such a solution or proposal. Actually, we would like to see peace between our people, the Palestinians, and our state. And and to move around and to be, we are the people who are between the rock and the hardy place. So it's very tough for us not to see our people, especially my relatives in.
I'm going to guess the next word was Gaza.
Yes.
Okay, sorry again to all our participants because we were still not able to. Oh, Thabet, are you back?
I'm back. I'm sorry.
Good.
I'm sorry. I keep losing you.
That's okay. You were talking about your relatives in, we think, Gaza.
In Gaza. Yeah, it's to me. I am the between the rock and the hardy place. From many Israelis treat us like a fifth colon, and we are not loyal enough to the state. And at the same time, my people, the Palestinians, look us, we are half Jews. We are really, we not authentic Palestinians, and just having peace, having confederation, two states. And
okay, Thabet, if you can hear me, you froze up again. So I think we will move to the next question.
Dalia, if I may just say something. I don't see this as a substitute for or an alternative to two states.
Yes, you said that.
Okay, I just wanted to say it again.
I understand.
Okay.
Do you want to elaborate?
No, I just think that this is, after we've agreed there will be two states, we have to discuss the relationship.
I would like to add to this. Some of my friends really... you accuse us that we are promoting one state solution. No. The first principle in our proposal talking about two independent and sovereign states, okay? But we still have to talk about the issues in stake, which is Jerusalem and refugees and settlements, okay? Mm-hmm. And we believe that the whole geographical area is very small. We have to move on.
Okay, Thabet, we lost you again. Let's go to the next question because I think we still have many. And this is also my prerogative because it's a question on public opinion from Jerome Siegel about whether we have data on whether Israelis and Palestinians are more supportive of a confederation than the traditional version of two states. As a public opinion researcher, I'll jump in on this. The answer is yes, we have data. No, there is not more support for this approach than for two states. And partly because we've only very recently begun to test it. It's not something that Israelis are very familiar with or Palestinians. They may have heard about it here or there, but it's not something that people truly have thought about at the mass level. What I can tell you is that at present, just under about a little less than 30% of Palestinians a similar number actually among Israelis support it. However, among Israeli Jews, the support is lower because the average is brought up by Arab Palestinian citizens. But regarding Israeli Jews, what we've seen over the last year and a half is a consistent rise of support from the initial starting point of about 20%, which has then risen to the upper 20s over the last year and a half in our survey research. And anybody is welcome to look at that research. It's the joint Israeli-Palestinian survey that I conduct with my colleague Khalil Shikaki. We have asked a pretty broad question about it, where we tried to just generally explain the contours. And so I think that, the main thing is that it's not very familiar. I can also tell you, however, from very, very recent qualitative research, that even people in focus groups, like, you know, random citizens, are starting to express skepticism about two-state separation, not from a right-wing perspective, but from a sort of centrist perspective. And in four focus groups I just conducted, at least two people said, you know, I think we should have a kind of open two states. One person even used the word confederation, and it was not somebody I knew of, you know, from activist circles. So I think the ideas are starting to get around, and that's one of the reasons why we saw this consistent moderate rise in support among Israeli Jews in our surveys. Okay, let me go to the next question from Richard Landback. Very simple. I like these questions. Simple and targeted. What happens to the separation wall?
We take it down.
Yeah, take it down. We don't need the wall.
Okay.
The separation wall is on the border anyway. So, I mean, it doesn't have any justification, but you have security. And you don't give up security, but it's joint.
Okay.
Nobody knows how to handle Hamas better than the Palestinians, believe me.
Yeah, it's walls representing separation, and we are against separation. So we have to turn it down.
Okay, that's a simple answer to a simple question. Jerome has another question, but Jerome, we already had one from you, so I'm going to go on to the next one so we give more people a chance. Joshua Lainsdorf, if I said that right, does BDS help or hurt this cause? Simple question.
Oh, yeah, well.
And we don't have that much time left. We can go a few minutes over, but try to keep your answers short so we can get to more questions.
I think BDS helps Bibi Netanyahu on the right wing more than it helps anything else. And the reason is that it's very easy to distort it or to claim that all of it is designed to delegitimize Israel. And I imagine there are people who support BDS, particularly in Europe, who do want to see the state of Israel disappear. But by and large, I don't think that is what BDS is supposed to be about. But the fact is, the only part of BDS that's working, in my opinion, is the academic boycott. And that is absolutely ridiculous, because the government of Israel is pretty well, not condemning, but certainly targeting the universities as hotbeds of criticism and peaceniks and so forth. So, I mean, that part of BDS is ridiculous, but it does seem to be the only part that's getting support. I can put in a word of my own opinion. Very personal opinion is that I'm in favor of selective sanctions. I personally boycott products from the settlements. I don't want to strengthen the settlements. They are illegal. And I think that selective sanctions might make a difference. But overall, BDS does two things. One is, I think it tends to rally around the public, rally around the flagpole. In other words, in very practical terms, they buy into the government and Netanyahu's claim that they're all anti-Semites and we've got to stand alone against the world and so on. So I think it has a negative effect, which is not the effect that it intended to have.
Okay, Tabet?
You're putting him on the spot.
I'm not sure if he's hearing us. Tabet, can you hear us? Okay, maybe not. Well, the next question actually would be good for him to hear as well.
Government, I don't know, some of the international community to pressure Israel to go for a peace process, maybe the Jewish community also in the United States.
Tabet, I'm sorry, but could you repeat it just briefly, because we didn't hear the beginning?
I said I agree with Galia. BDS benefit Netanyahu, not anybody else. I am against BDS. However, we still have to pressure Israel to go for a process. That pressure that can come from the Jewish community around the world, from United States administration and other friends of Israel.
Okay, with apologies to Toby Citrin, I'm going to skip to David Stone, because your question is very similar to this theme, which is summarized. That's a nice long question. Should this or any peace plan, let's say, be imposed by a third party? Because the parties don't seem willing to get there on their own. And there's it's a great question, lots of comparative examples, but I'll keep it short for now. Should external parties try to step in and impose this kind of plan?
I believe that international community should play a part in, I don't know, I don't like to use the word imposing, helping the two parties to start a peace process and to finalize a just solution between the two parties. We need an involvement, I would call that, involvement of the international community, especially the Friends of Israel.
Okay, involvement, not imposing. Galia, do you want to add?
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think we need international help. We need international pressure. We need the help because we're not, there's an asymmetrical situation here, and we definitely need some help. We need guarantees, which we got in the past, and peace agreement with Egypt wouldn't have happened if America hadn't intervened, provided certain guarantees for Israel. And I think pressure is definitely needed. From the Jewish community, yes, but government pressure as well, EU pressure, for example. But I don't think you can impose a settlement. And it wouldn't work, obviously, but pressure is not the same thing. It has to be a bottom up, the kind of work that the Tabit does and his organizations and the kind of work we do in the peace camp. It has to be bottom up. Populations have to agree to it, but at the same time, to get our government go there, we need pressure.
Okay. I'm going to conflate a few of the questions now because we're getting towards the end, but several people have asked, what about the reality of terror? How do we deal with Hamas, which so far has not even recognized the legitimacy of Israel and you know, won't cooperate with the PA? And I'm conflating that with another question about what happens when there's a terror attack? How do we deal with this? But let's start with the Hamas question. I mean, is there any way to move a plan like this ahead with a divided leadership, and one of those sides of the divided leadership is completely uncooperative?
Look, I believe that. Right. Go ahead, Galia.
No, go ahead, because you keep fading
out. Let's start, Tabet, because we're afraid we'll lose you.
Well, I believe that terror is terror. We have to oppose terror and to condemn terror. I don't think that terror can really help the Palestinian. It's hurting the Palestinian cause. However, I believe that the most important thing to think about the causes of terror. We have to give hope for Palestinians. If, for example, there is no siege in Gaza, if the life of Palestinians in Gaza Strip is better than what we are seeing, we will not see all of this demonstration in the fence between Israel and Palestine. So, always will be some radicals on both sides that we have to condemn and try to reduce this phenomena. I think when we give hope, when there is a peace between the two states, I think the overwhelming majority of the Palestinians and Israelis will support that.
Okay, Galia?
Yeah, I think that's true, by the way. If you take away the siege on Gaza, if you look at Hamas strength over the years, it's basically been the result of the failure of the PLO in negotiations and everything else, the failure of the path of negotiations that the PLO chose. If you actually have success and you have an independent state, it would be very, very hard for Hamas to continue to justify to its own public actions that would disrupt peace. Now, it doesn't mean they won't try, but their attraction would be much, much, much limited. And where you do have your extremists, and you'll have settlers who say, we want sovereignty over the whole land that's God-given and so on, but we have joint security. And I would like to add that for better or for worse, the Palestinian Authority is much better at handling security vis-a-vis Hamas in the West Bank than Israel ever has been.
Maybe that's because, like Rabin said, they don't have B'Tselem and they don't have the High Court. Is that true?
Well, maybe I don't. We've talked about the fact that this plan talks about a democratic country, democratic states on both sides, and also human rights and protecting human rights. So I don't know that any security forces would be able to just run wild. But we're talking about joint security, and we're talking about keeping a situation. If you go to Northern Ireland, the most important thing for people there has been not to return to the violence, what they call the troubles. And then a lot can be done to avoid that. And that's where I think you'll be. Even with your more extreme elements, it will be very hard for them to justify their violence and to gain support for it.
Okay. I am going to take the next question myself, then I'll ask you guys one more question, and then we'll have to wrap up. Rebecca Pomerantz asked if the European Union is a good model for understanding this. I'm going to jump in on that and say basically, yes. And the reason is first of all, as a political framework, there's a similarity. We start with separate states who all retain their sovereignty and separate independence. The open border concept does not give up on security. It does not allow a free for all, but it allows people to have significantly more freedom of movement. And I think there's another more historic component that is worth comparing. And that's that who 100 years ago would ever have imagined that these countries that were responsible for the biggest bloodshed the world had ever known until that point would be living with open borders. So when people say, how can we imagine a more open border between Israel and Palestine? They're killing each other. They were in Europe too. And in fact, you could argue that it's the greater connections, the greater freedom to move, the greater opportunities that have allowed for economic benefit that have helped to keep the peace for all these years in Europe for the countries that were part of it. Even as the European Union struggles, I think it's a valuable comparison. So let me move to the last question. I'm sorry that we didn't get to everybody, but I tried to get to a lot of them. And this has to do with the identity concept. It's directed at Jews, but we can ask it on the Palestinian side as well. What would this do to the fear among Jews or the desire among Jews to keep a Jewish majority state? And we could ask the same thing on the Palestinian side. Palestinians probably, I don't know, Thabit, maybe you can tell us, would like to live in a state where a majority are Palestinian. How does this approach address that? This does sort of relate to the question about Zionism, but I think that's probably too long for now. So why don't we answer that question and then get to the final remarks.
Thabit?
Well, I believe that as long as we live in a democratic...
Thabit, we're losing you. Okay, let's start with Galia. Maybe we'll get Thabit back afterwards. Galia, you can start.
My understanding
is... I'm sorry, do you hear me?
You have to start from the beginning. We lost you at the start.
Okay, I think the issue of majority and minority, it becomes very important when you have a very discriminated system, when you have, you don't have a democratic system, when you have discrimination. This is the case of Israel right now. I can tell you, just think about the nation state law, okay? And other issues. So, I believe that we have to guarantee democracy for every single person in the Palestinian state and Israel too. This is not the case right now. And as long as there is no democracy, we cannot really talk about that I'm satisfied. And we have to work harder to make both societies a democratic one.
Okay, Thabit, can you want to give us a final remark as well, the most important thing you think people should take away from this discussion? Maybe we lost him on that note. Okay, Galia, go ahead, you start, and then we'll come back to Thabit if he wants to add.
I think you could always pose theoretically that there would be people who would want to take citizenship, Jews take citizenship in the Palestinian state in order to take it over, and vice versa, the Palestinians in the Jewish state. I mean, you can always argue that, and it's conceivable. I doubt it would happen. But I think there's also issue of immigration, and I think that there would be both states would have control over their immigration and possibly have agreements over immigration. And I think you take a lot of the sting away from it when each people has its own state. I think the human rights issue is very, very important. And if you have the human rights issue, then I think it becomes a lot easier for a Palestinian who is living in Israel to want to be a member to be a citizen in the Palestinian state. I don't want to do away with the states. That's why I'm in favor of a two-state solution. I believe Jews have a right to a state. That's why I immigrated 52, 53 years ago. I didn't want to be a minority. I won't go to live in the Palestinian state as a minority, even if there's equality. And that's me. I think that there are ways that we have to ensure that people feel that they are living in their own state, that the state, that the people have self-determination, a feeling of it, and of equality. And I think that's where human rights comes in. And human rights will be joint, according to this plan. There will be a joint committee to ensure that human rights are respected for minorities in both states. And immigration is going to be something that will be worked out. I'm not saying there won't be issues. Now, what is the positive thing you want us to sum up?
Oh, well, I mean, you can sum up, but actually, let me prompt your final thought.
Okay.
You said there will be issues and obstacles. You've both said that. We're all realistic. Are these obstacles any greater than the obstacles currently in the way of a traditional two-state solution?
I can't measure it.
Okay.
I don't know, but I think the problem of the idea of separation, two hermetically sealed states, is a formula for trouble, because you will be cutting people off, you will be limiting them, and I think it's like burying your head in the sand. I don't think it can be done. And I'm not talking practical, obviously. Water, we have to have cooperation. Economically, we have to have cooperation. But I think even politically and socially, I think it begs for communication. It begs for tearing down the walls, because you're going to have resentment. You're going to have recidivism if you don't open things up. And that's what the Europeans discovered. You're right in talking about the EU. Doesn't mean it's without problems, but that's exactly what they discovered.
Okay, well, Galia, I have to tell you that your thoughts are so appreciated that Joshua Lansdorf thinks that you should run for Knesset. Losing won't matter. Getting your knowledge and logic in front of the voters would do wonders, and I quote. Tabit, can you offer us some final thoughts? Specifically, maybe about the obstacles. Are they any worse than a two-state solution?
Yeah, first of all, I would like to apologize for keep losing you. I didn't hear a lot, sorry. And then I would like to say that for me, Israel, first of all, is a Jewish state, always will be a Jewish state. However, for me, the Jewishness of the state is very thin layer, okay? Still, I believe Israel should be.
Well, we got the part that Tabit recognizes a Jewish state. Is he coming back? All right, I'll give it one more second because I'd like to hear his final thoughts.
We have to give a hope to Palestinian people. This was important, and to start a peace process immediately.
Okay, so thank you, everybody. We have to end this conversation. I'd love to give my final thoughts, but I have so many. I think that the main thing I would try to hint at this in my final question is that there are problems with this approach, whether we call it a confederation or two states, one homeland, but I think we ought not to diminish the inevitable problems, very significant problems of the traditional two-state approach, and maybe consider that they are even more severe. And it's something to think about. It's one of the reasons why I have come to take such an interest in advancing the research and thinking about a confederation or whatever name we want to use for it. So we have to end, but thank you so much for joining us for this conversation with Israel and Palestine. I want to thank both Galia Golan and Tabit Abu Ras. Thank you really for bearing with the difficulty on the sound. Thank you to the staff at Partners for Progressive Israel for their work and for making this discussion happen. I really personally think it's very important to get the understanding out there that this is not a binary question of one state or two. There are alternatives. If you want to look, understand more about Partners for Progressive Israel, you can go to their website, which is progressiveisrael.org. You can learn more about them and their future programs. Thank you, everybody, for being on the line. Thank you for your questions. You've been such a polite audience.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dalia.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.